Appreciate the message that Brother Asa has brought forth and a desire and interest in your prayers at the time that we stand before you. The Lord uses examples in His Word that we can understand and that we can relate to. And He does it so that we'll be able to apply it in our life. We'll be able to learn from it and we'll be able to use it in our life. And so a lot of the teachings that Jesus Christ does is through parables, but it's parables of actual examples and actual stories that help us to learn something. In Matthew chapter 22, it talks about a wedding. A wedding. In this wedding, there's a lot that we can learn from this parable or this wedding feast that was taking place here. Yesterday, I had the privilege of attending a wedding service. I knew the individual, I knew the bride well, and I knew that she'd been preparing for a long time for this wedding. She was very excited, she was looking forward to it, she'd put a lot of effort into it, as well as the groom had as well. It was about 185 miles away. And I thought, I don't know if I want to drive on Memorial Weekend 185 miles, especially with the traffic that's going to be on 95. And so all these thoughts begin to creep through my mind about all the reasons why not to travel to this wedding. Then I remembered all of the effort that had gone into making the plans and making the preparations, and how that it was real important to the bride and the groom. And so I talked to my sister and I expressed to her some of my concerns, and she said, "It'll mean a lot to them if you're there." So I turned the car around and I took off and headed the 186 miles to the wedding. I'd forgotten what time the wedding was. And I was off by an hour. But thankfully, I was off by an hour in my favor. That's a big help. If you're going to be off, it's better to be off ahead of time. It was in a little town that I'd been through, but I didn't know the location of it, and so that extra hour helped a whole lot to be able to locate the place where the wedding was. And I wanted to be sure that I got there before the bride and groom came out. That was real important to me. I didn't want to get there after the wedding had already been started. I don't know if you've ever, you've heard of some folks that they say, well, they'll better watch it, they might miss their own funeral service. You ever known folks that was the case? I like what Brother Compton said. He said, if I'm going to have to wait on this end or that end, he says, I'd just as soon wait on the other end. I'd just soon wait where I need to be. Well, I was real thankful I had an extra hour there, and I utilized most of that hour. Was real thankful for that. This wedding feast, Jesus Christ and His messengers send out the invitation. Now, after you listen to this example of the wedding, I hope you'll even view wedding invitations more seriously. Because Jesus Christ sends out an invitation, and on the invitation, many of you have sent them out, many of you have received them. It says, you are invited. And sometimes they'll have an added little card in there that says RSVP. Return this by a certain date. It'll help us a whole lot to know how many to cook for. It'll help us a whole lot to know how many places to set at the table. It'll help us a whole lot to know how many preparations to make. But out of all the people that there are, you've received this in the mail with your name on it, and it says, you are invited. You apparently meant so much to that individual or individuals that sent that invitation out that it was so important to them, it was special to them to send the invitation to you and say, you are invited to this wonderful occasion, this lifetime experience, this feast time. Now, Jesus Christ is the one that sends out the invitation. Now, just so you don't get concerned, this is not the invitation that Christ sends out for you to grab a hold of and receive, and then all of a sudden, you've got eternal life. That's not what he's talking about. But he does send an invitation out. And when he sends an invitation out, he expects an RSVP. And then when he gets an RSVP, he expects you to be at the wedding. He does. Now, it'd be better not to send the RSVP back and say, there's two of us that are coming. There's six of us that are coming. Than to send the RSVP back and say, well, I'm coming, my wife's coming, my family's coming. And then not showing up. It would be better not send it back. You say, what does that have to do with us here today? The kingdom of heaven is, first of all, anywhere that Christ is. But it's especially referred to, oftentimes, as his indwelling place with his people. In his kingdom, in his church. The church is his kingdom here on earth. Now, you may say, well, Brother Stephen, I've researched this chapter. I know all about it. He's talking about Jews and Gentiles. Well, he is. But you know that the scriptures can have a diversity of meanings on it. And there are lessons that we can learn from the parable that will help us today. I don't believe it was just for those disobedient Jews that didn't regard Jesus Christ, but I think there's lessons in it for us today. Let's look at what he says. Jesus answered and spake unto them again by a parable, by something they could understand, by something they could relate. And he says, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a certain king, which made a marriage for his son. Now, this is not just any type of wedding. The one that's making all the preparations is the king. It's pretty important. All the weddings are important. And I remember, I can look through the congregation and I can see many of you here that made great preparations for your wedding. I think of Jamie and Catherine and,
and that little carriage ride that they had out in the country. Now, wouldn't that have been something if nobody had come? Really? I mean, they enjoyed it, but they enjoyed it a whole lot more because everybody was there. Remember, Sister Rebecca was making preparations for months, sewing garments together. Do you think there'd have been any way in the world that she wouldn't have gone to that wedding? No way. You'd have probably had to carry her on a stretcher if she was sick to get her there, but she'd be there. Remember Craig and Maria's wedding? Oh, it was nice. It was set up well. But one of the things that added a whole lot to it were the folks that were there. It was a great, great blessing. Remember Carl and Asa's? I mean, it's not just every day that a wedding is performed by a 102-year-old. We witnessed something that, as Brother Compton would say, this is making history. Remember that great blessing of that wedding ceremony. You can think back about your own wedding and how that God blessed you and what a happy and special time that it was. Jesus gives them this lesson, and he says, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a certain king that he did bid his son, made a marriage for his son, and he sent forth his servants to call them that were bidden to the wedding. They sent the invitations out. I understand this can be applied to the Jews, but I believe there's some additional meanings in this as well. They sent the invitations out, but they wouldn't come. They sent out 200 invitations, and they didn't get any RSVPs back. They sent out invitations, and they didn't come. Look at what he says. And again he sent forth other servants, saying, tell them which are bidden, behold, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and my fatlings are killed, and all things are ready. Come unto the marriage. He said, I've prepared the oxen. I've prepared the fatlings. He said, all things are ready. He says, bid them to come to the marriage. He said, I've reserved the finest hall. I've taken the very best of my flock and I've prepared the very best food that there is. All the dainties are there that the king can offer. It's going to be a feast time. It's going to be a happy time. And he says, you go and remind the folks and bid them to come. Now, yes, it certainly can be applied to the Jews and the Gentiles, and you'll see where Jesus Christ removed it from the Jews and called the Gentiles, and yes, there was response among the Gentiles. Typically speaking, the Jews don't have the same view of Christ in many cases. There are some that do, and there's a great blessing when that is the case. You may have some Jewish friends that love Christ. I had someone ask me, what's the requirement that you have of providing and doing a wedding service? And I said, one of the first and main requirements, and all ministers are a little bit different and all have different degrees of what they are comfortable with. But I said, at a bare minimum, both the husband and the wife must be believers in Jesus Christ. You don't have a basis that there's going to be any degree or measure of success in your marriage in living together 50, 60, 70 years if you don't both have a hope and a belief in Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is the one that's going to keep you together and see you through all the challenges that you're going to face in life. Because Satan's going to throw a whole host of darts. And you need to both be believers in Jesus Christ. At a bare minimum. I've heard some folks, some ministers say, well, I wouldn't marry them unless they're both Old Baptist. Well, that's for that minister. I say that they both have to be believers in Jesus Christ. It's a great blessing. It's a wonderful blessing if you can live your life in the church with your companion and you're worshiping together, and that's a great, great blessing. But I believe that both must be believers in Jesus Christ, and that's a great, great blessing. It is. Let's look at what he says. Christ said, I have prepared a marriage feast for you. He says, I've prepared a marriage feast for you. And he said, I have sent you a personal invitation with your name on it. And he says, to come to the wedding feast, to come to the marriage, the wedding feast, and enjoy it and feast upon it together. I don't believe that it is a stretch at all of the parable. I don't believe for a minute that it is out of bounds of the parable. That every time the Lord meets with us in His house, it's just like a marriage feast. Because the Lord has promised to be there where two or three are gathered together in My name, there am I in the midst of them also. And I believe that he placed a lot of emphasis on this wedding ceremony, but I believe that He places a whole lot of emphasis upon His church. And that marriage feast that He prepares, and that table that He prepares, every time that we have the opportunity to assemble ourselves together and worship Him together. He provides that feast table. It's loaded with bountiful blessings of the doctrines of His grace, of His mercy, of His compassion. You may say, well, I don't necessarily like the menu that day. At this party, they're having fish, and I don't like fish. So I don't think I'm going to go. I'll go when they're having roast or steak or chicken, pork chops. But I'm not going to go because it's fish today. In the church and in the message, there's a whole lot of things that are comforting, that are edifying, that are encouraging, that are great blessings. I'd sign up myself to hear a message about the doctrines of grace every day of the week. But you know, He's also got, in His Word, it addresses responsibility and it addresses duty. And it addresses change, and it addresses repentance. And we might say, well, that's kind of like fish. I don't like fish. I don't think I'll go today because, last week the preacher told me I needed to make changes, and I think I'm just going to pass today. Let me put it this way. We had a great blessing last Sunday evening. After the baptism, we changed clothes, and then Brother Asa pulled up his great big van out here. And he packed it full of folks. And one of the individuals that was in there was Sister Perry. She wanted to go down and hear Elder Bradley preach down in Virginia. So here we take off, and loaded van, go down to Virginia and have great fellowship, enjoyed the time together. Elder Bradley just turned 80 years old. Never thought Brother Bradley would get old, but he turned 80 years old. Sister Perry told Elder Bradley's grandson, said, "Why, your granddad stayed in my home before he was married." Had to be about 60 years ago. She said, "I just wanted to go and hear Elder Bradley again." She took that 2-hour trip, or it should be normally 2 hours, about 2.5 because of the traffic, down to Fairfax. And we get ready to leave, and Brother Bradley's voice is not as strong as it used to be. Sister Perry's hearing's not as keen as it used to be. And she said, "I'm sorry to say, I didn't hear a word that he said. But," she said, "I enjoyed getting to see him. I enjoyed the singing. I enjoyed the fellowship. I enjoyed the trip." And she said, "In fact, I enjoyed every minute of the day." But she couldn't hear a word that he said. We may not like every single thing that's at the wedding, but we ought to go. And if we go with the right attitude, you're going to get something. And when you come to the Lord's house, you may say, "Well, Brother Stephen's not my favorite preacher." Well, I don't blame you. He's not mine either. But you know what? If you'll go desiring that God will bless you to get something, you will. And did you know that if you go and you pray that not only will I get a blessing, but Lord, in some small way, would you somehow use me to be a blessing? I tell you what, Sister Perry was a blessing. Maybe she didn't like the fish, she couldn't hear the message, but she was a blessing. You just don't see too many folks that are about to be 100 years old sign up to take a trip down to Fairfax and go to church in the evening. It would have been a lot easier for her to stay at home. But she was a blessing. We need to pray that God will not only bless us to receive a blessing, but that we will be a blessing. Now, did you know that if a great deal of effort is prepared to have a feast, and then we don't come, that's a great discouragement to those that are around? It is. Now, I'm just going to be perfectly honest with you. Yesterday, I talked to a minister, not in this state, in another state, although it could happen in this state. But I talked to a minister, and he was just about ready. He may still do it. He was just about ready to pitch in the towel, resign as pastor, because he says, "I get so discouraged." He says, "When I go to the house of the Lord, I've prepared, I've studied a message." And he says, "Folks just don't come. If there's anything else at all that is in their life, then they do that instead of coming to church." We get in the attitude that church is great if I don't have anything else in my life. But that's not what God says. If you are a Christian, and if you have sent that RSVP card back, you say, "Well, what are you talking about?" If you said, I saw, and believe me, I don't follow Facebook. I don't have a Facebook account. But my sister showed me an individual that had a Facebook, and it gave the description of the individual, and it said, follower of Jesus Christ. If you've said, yes, I believe in Christ, and you followed in gospel baptism, and you've taken up your cross to follow Jesus Christ, you sent your RSVP card back in. You did. And Christ expects you to be there. This minister said, I am so discouraged. I'm so despondent. I don't know what else to do. And he said, I'm just about ready to resign as pastor. I can tell you, yes, it's discouraging to me. But you know what? I'm not really the one that counts. How do you think the Lord views it? Hebrews 11 and 12 talks about those old patriarchs of faith. I was blessed to know a couple. I was blessed to know a bunch in my life when I grew up in the Lubbock church. There was an old sister in the Lubbock church. I think she stayed in Sister Rebecca's home. Sister Olive A. Johnson. She was my pastor's mother. She had health issues. Made it difficult for her to come to church sometimes. In fact, she would be in the hospital. I've known of this numerous times. She'd be in the hospital Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And she knew that oftentimes the doctors didn't make their rounds in that Lubbock, Texas hospital. And so on Friday evening when the doctor came by, she'd say, Doctor, she did this every time. She said, Doctor, would it be okay? Do you mind? Would it be okay if you write me out a pass? So that I can go to church on Sunday morning. I want my family to pick me up, take me to church, then bring me back to the hospital. Did you know that I thought, I saw that example, and I thought that was the standard. I thought that's the way it's supposed to be. That if we're able, and even sometimes if we're not, that it is such a priority in our life that we'll make every effort to be there rather than allow an excuse not to. Now it says that these folks didn't go to the wedding because they were working. It says some of them went to the field. Some of them went to the merchandise or marketplace. Those that lived in the country went to the field. Those that were in town went to the marketplace. But it says that they had other things that distracted them. It mentions two areas here. Did you know that work is honorable? It is. God has provided a way that we're to eat. He says a man that doesn't work, he ought not to eat. Well now, you take somebody that's lazy and let them miss a few meals and they'll find out that I don't mind work quite so bad. That's his solution. You don't want to work, don't eat. You want to eat, work. That's his solution for it. Work is honorable. He tells us in Timothy that a man that won't provide for his own, that he's worse than an infidel. And I used to think, what's an infidel? It's an unbeliever. He says, if you won't provide for your own, if you are possibly able to, he says it's worse than an unbeliever. God has designed that we work. Work is honorable. God gives us 6 days to work. And the old timer said that he gave us from sun up till sundown. I don't know where this idea came up about 8 hours. That we work 8 hours. You talk to Brother Justice Eapen, I seriously doubt that his farm runs on an 8-hour work day. I seriously doubt that it does. The old timer said that the work day was, and some of them, it was before sunup. I think it is even for Brother Justice. But we've got 6 days that God, now I understand, and I understand that there's a place for you to work on Sunday occasionally, and that it's referred to as the ox in the ditch, and sometimes the ox is in the ditch, and sometimes you have to, and sometimes you may have to for a season of life, or you may be in an occupation like a police or a doctor or something like that that you absolutely have to. But I don't think it's wrong for us to pray that God will, if we're in that setting, I don't think it's wrong for us to pray that God will open a door for us to where we can at least have that window of 2 or 3 hours on Sunday to be at the house of the Lord. Don't think that's a far stretch on it. I don't know where we came up with this 8 hours a day. Well, I work my 8 hours, I'm out of here. Brother Jim Dixon, many of you remember Jim Dixon. Jim Dixon said he worked at the proving ground. They said to him, "Jim, you want some overtime?" He says, "No, I really don't even want to work straight time." Well, sometimes we get in that mode. But you got 6 days to work straight time, overtime, however you term it. You've got 6 days to do it. Now, I'm going to tell you how Satan plays with our thinking. He'll say, maybe he doesn't talk to you this way. I hope he doesn't. Well, look at how much you've accomplished from Monday to Saturday. My goodness, you've got so much accomplished. Now, if you'll just work on Sunday, look how much more you're going to accomplish. Look how much more money you're going to make. Why, you may even get the front porch power washed on the house. You might get that laundry caught up in the laundry room. Might even get the car washed. Look at all that you can get accomplished. Elder Compton was a wise old man. He said, "Brother Stephen," he said, "I grew up working in Washington, D.C. And he said, "I thought I had to work 7 days a week." And he said, "But when the Lord convicted me to work 6 days a week," he said, "all of a sudden, what I made in 6 days went a whole lot further than working 7 days." He said, "When I worked 7 days, there were a lot more holes in the bag. When I worked 6 days, it went a whole lot further." Now, I'm not boasting, and my car may not start when I go out in the parking lot. And I hope it does, because I've got a 3 o'clock flight to go see my sister. And I hope it'll start. But my car has 330 to 323,000 miles on it. And it just runs like a top. And I'll give you the telephone number to Gennady Soiker. Many of you know him on a first name basis because he services your cars as well. And he'll tell you that rarely ever Does anything go wrong with it except changing the oil and changing the tires? And it just runs and runs and runs. Now, I'm going to tell you, I don't think that just happens. I think God blesses it too. Brother Gus Harder said, when we had our kids, when we started putting the Lord first in our life, when we made it a priority in our life and we put the Lord first and everything else was second, did you know that the tires lasted longer on the car? He said the kids' shoes didn't wear out. He said all these things that used to go wrong didn't go wrong. There is a difference. You say, well, my life is falling apart. Things are breaking down. I feel overwhelmed. I feel overcome. It wouldn't hurt to reevaluate your life and see, is Christ a priority in my life? Am I a follower of Jesus Christ? Am I only a follower by name? Am I only say that I'm a member of that church and I'm on the church books and when I die, I want to have a good old Baptist funeral? Or do we want to live as followers of Jesus Christ? That when people meet us, that they know that there is a difference, that we are a follower of Jesus Christ. Here he says, I am bidding a wedding feast. I have prepared it. Did you know that every Sunday he prepares a feast for you and I? Now, let me ask you something. Wouldn't you feel bad if you got here and the bride and groom were already standing up here in the front? I would. If you want to drive over to Mountain Road on right off Interstate 95, drive down Interstate 95, get off on exit 77 to the right, Mountain Road, and look up at that church building up on the right. It's a church, I can't think of the name of it, Emerton something. Beautiful, beautiful facility up on the right. They have a sign out front. And I thought maybe this would be a blessing for us. It was real important for me to know what time the wedding was. If I'd gotten it an hour off the other way, I'd have missed it. It was really important to know. If you drive down there and you make a right on Mountain Road and you look to the right, there is this huge sign. And all it says, this is all. We could actually take that sign and borrow it and put it here. All it says, simply, is 10:30. That's all it says. Doesn't say anything else. Doesn't say singing, praying, preaching, Sunday school. Doesn't say anything else. It just says simply 10:30. It's important to know what time the wedding feast is. It's important not to miss the bride and groom as they come up the aisle. Here's another part that he says right here. Verse 5. It says, but they made light of it. And the Lord was angry with them because they made light of it. In Lubbock, Texas, there is a loop. It's called Loop 289. It goes all the way around the heart of the city. I hadn't been a member of the church long. I was about 17 years old. And I was headed to church. And on the way to church, driving to church, and on the way to church, Satan began to put in my mind, on the way to church, all the things that I needed to get done before Monday morning. So I came to the next exit and I got off the exit and I turned around and I got back on the inside of the loop and I was heading back home instead of going to church. Now, the Lord has never spoken to me in an audible voice. Maybe He has you, but He hasn't to me yet. But He gave me an impression in my mind that was so strong, it was almost like an audible voice. And the thought came to my mind, I've blessed you to have the truth. I've blessed you to have a church family. I just barely had a natural family. Now I had a church family. I blessed you to have a church family. I blessed you to have the truth. My dad used to say this, and the thought came to mind, son, if you know what's good for you, you'll do the right thing. That came to mind as well. So I drove to the next exit. I turned around. I headed back to church. Now, I serve the Lord for a whole host of reasons. But I want to tell you, one of the reasons is that I fear the Lord. I really do. I do. God has blessed me with great health. I'm so thankful. As far as I know, there's not anything wrong. There may be, other than sin, which is the biggest problem I have. But thank the Lord. I might have to start next week, but I don't take medication. He's blessed me with good health. I feel like given me the ability to be able to serve Him and to worship Him. And I tell you, I'm afraid not to. I am. He said, I sent them an invitation to the wedding. And He said, they made light of it. Matthew chapter 6 says that where our treasure is, there will our heart be also. I believe we have a clear example in Matthew, I believe it's 25 or 26, where it says that He gave one individual one talent, He gave another individual two talents, He gave another individual five talents, and the one that had five talents, He took and used those, and God gave him another five. The individual that had two talents, He took and used those, and He doubled his talents. But the individual that had one talent, He went and hid that talent, and He says that He took it away from him, and He gave it to somebody else. I've known folks that at one time they rejoiced in the message of God's sovereign grace. They enjoyed the simplicity of the worship service. And then they were like Demas that forsook Paul and forsook the teachings, because it says they love this present world. This old world, there's nothing in it. There's nothing in it that compares to even a close second to what the Lord has in His church and in His kingdom. And when we start compromising our commitment to Christ, yes, it's going to affect those around us. It is. You say, well, the song service, it's just not the best. Well, you know what? You know how to make it better? Is to get there and belt it out. If you don't think it's top notch, get there and pray that God will bless it to be with His Holy Spirit. I honestly don't know what else to say. I believe He's very clear in His teaching on it. It says they made light of it. Lord doesn't want us to make light of it. Now, He has promised that He's going to have a church here somewhere. But did you know that when a congregation makes light of it, He withdraws the candlestick? I'm so thankful that Mount Carmel's been here 80 years. And I hope it'll be here another 80 years. But I tell you what, young folks, if after I'm gone and if after Asa's gone, you make light of it, or even in our lifetime, if we make light of it, the Lord will withdraw the candlestick and He'll give it to somebody that'll appreciate it. He will. Elder Conrado Quito is an able minister in the Philippines. Pastors a strong church in the Philippines. And when somebody follows in gospel baptism, he visits in their home for 3 months, once a week, teaching them the doctrines of grace, but also the responsibility of being at the house of the Lord and worshiping together. And it is a priority for the individuals. And he's taught them in such a way how much of a priority it is. I've told this to you before. He's taught it in such a way that he's taught the folks that it's important if you have a doctor's appointment, you're there on time. It's important that if you have a job that you're going to be interviewing for, you're there on time. To the point that on Sunday morning, I saw this. That at 10:30, they locked the doors. I'm not advocating it. I'm just telling you what they do. The first few times, folks come running. Sometimes there's even folks standing at the door and listening. You may say, well, I wouldn't put up with that. I'd go to another church. Well, you know what? If you believe the doctrines of grace, it's going to narrow down a whole lot of places that you can go and find. It is. But the point being, it is a priority in their life. Now, I don't think we're saying stepping out of bounds to say that he says that in Matthew chapter 6, he says that we are to seek first. If we don't watch it, if we don't watch it in our own lives, he'll either take it from us or take it from our children, and he'll give it to somebody else that'll appreciate it. We don't watch it in Bel Air, Maryland. He'll withdraw the candlestick. Columbia, Wilmington, other places. You can go on down and read the rest of the parable. But it says that they made light of it. Now, I tell you what. I don't like to upset my mother. I don't like to upset my father. I don't like to upset you. If I've said something that's offensive to you, and I know about it, I'll come and apologize to you. I will. Because I don't want there to be that breach in fellowship. I don't. But you know what? The one more importantly than all else is I don't want to upset the Lord. And if the Lord bids us an invitation to come to His feast, He's prepared the table, He's blessed with the feast, He's blessed with the message to be proclaimed, He's blessed with the singing, He's blessed with His Spirit, He's blessed with the fellowship. He's blessed it wholeheartedly, and He sends the invitation to you, and you send in an RSVP card, and He says, come. And I believe that He takes it serious when He says, come. You folks are like a bunch of Sister Perrys. God uses you as an encouragement to encourage those that are around you. God uses you as an encouragement to encourage Brother Asa, and God uses you as an encouragement to encourage myself. Pray that God will use you to be a blessing. And in God using you to be a blessing, you'll receive a blessing. If God uses you to encourage somebody, you think that you're trying to encourage them, you'll leave encouraged. How many times have you gone to the hospital to visit somebody? Sister Tracy, go down to see Sister Malcolm and try to encourage her. And Sister Tracy would be telling, what a blessing this is. What a blessing. Usually when we start thinking about ourselves and getting down and sad and depressed and discouraged, and I'll sign up for that. But when we're used to try to help somebody else and we forget thinking about ourselves,
it helps us a whole lot. If God can bless us to be a blessing to somebody else. And you know what? One of the neatest things that he does is he does it. You can do it throughout your whole work week. But the neat thing, he does it. Not only, but especially in his church. What a blessing that that is. I miss Judy when she's not here. It takes her an awful lot of effort. Probably as much effort as this whole side of the church to get ready. But did you know that little act of encouragement when Sister Lee sent her a batch of flowers from the church? You heard her tell last week what a blessing that was. She'd been having a hard time. She thought her MS was acting up and that she was at a new level, which was less than before, and she was having a really rough time. And all of a sudden, she gets an encouragement from the church that we're praying for you. We love you. And it was a help to her. You can be a help to other people. What a blessing that that is. If I've offended anyone, I'm sorry. It wasn't my intent at all. My intent is to encourage you. And God's word is an encouragement to me. You're an encouragement to me. If you wasn't, I wouldn't still be here, most likely. Wouldn't be. But I ultimately trust that I'm encouraged in the Lord. And that's where the encouragement comes from. And that's where yours should come as well. May God bless you.